Item number 9 and 10, I would like to suggest, because these items go as a pair and they will take a few minutes, why don't we get set up in the meantime, take a five-minute break so we could settle in and take these. So five-minute break.
Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, consider adoption of a revised National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit for the Occidental County Sanitation District and Sonoma County Water Agency for the Occidental Wastewater Treatment Facility, order number R1-2012-0101. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear and affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? Fantastic. So start off with staff presentation.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
Because this is a West County sewer issue, I need to recuse myself.
Well, you will be sorely missed, sir, but we look forward to your return.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Chairman Noren and members of the board. My name is Kathy Goodwin, and I am staff engineer to the regional board, and I will be giving the staff presentation for two items, adoption of a renewed NPDES permit for the Occidental Sanitation District wastewater facility, and also a cease and desist order. And Patty's going to go ahead and put the presentation up for us. I'm going to discuss both orders in my presentation, but after public comment, you will be voting on each order separately.
Hey, can I interrupt you? Since we're going to go down that road, why don't I just read in then the hearing procedure for the companion item as well?
Perfect.
So this is a time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of a cease and desist order R1-2012-0102 for the Occidental County Sanitation District and Sonoma County Water Agency in the matter of the Occidental Wastewater Treatment Facility. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those expect to give testimony rise again? Please raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear and affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
All right. With that, then, we can take both items. Thank you.
So to continue, this week you were emailed a late revisions document for the permit, and that is to be added to the materials in your agenda packages for these items. And at this time, I would like to enter the file into the record. So during my presentation, I'm going to give you an overview of the wastewater facility, and then I would like to discuss the history of permitting and enforcement, the proposed permit, and comments received on the permit. Very quickly, Occidental is located about 15 miles from Santa Rosa, just under this red star on the map. And this slide is here to help me orient you to the components of the Occidental wastewater system. So here we have a north arrow. For those familiar with Occidental, here we have Grayton Road coming into town. There are about 70 connections to this sewer system, so it's very small. A little more than half of the flow is residential, and the other half is primarily commercial flows and primarily from restaurants in town. Sewage is pumped from town to the treatment plant, which is kind of hiding behind these trees. And there the wastewater receives secondary treatment. It's chlorinated, then dechlorinated. And year-round, treated wastewater is discharged to this pond here. It's called Graham's Pond. It's a 10 million gallon reservoir that was constructed many, many years ago at the headwaters of Dutch Bill Creek. So Dutch Bill Creek kind of begins right in this area, and then, you know, we've got the creek flowing down into town and then out to Camp Meeker and ultimately to the Russian River, which Dutch Bill Creek is tributary to. During the dry season, water is released from Graham's Pond to this irrigation field, and during the wet season, its release to Dutch Bill Creek. So here's the plant. It's owned by the Occidental County Sanitation District, and it's operated and maintained by the Sonoma County Water Agency. And as I mentioned, it's a really small plant. It's designed to treat an average dry weather flow of 50,000 gallons per day. Typical dry weather flows are about 20,000 gallons per day. Here we have the aeration pond, which provides the majority of the treatment. And we have a settling pond, and the facility also has chlorination, dechlorination, and pH adjustment facilities. And then this is Graham's Pond that I mentioned in the earlier slide. Regional Board staff analysis has determined that Graham's Pond is a water of the United States due to its construction at the headwaters of Dutch Bill Creek. So they really begin right here. Occidental Road is up above here, but all of the natural stormwater flow during the rainy season flows into the pond on these slopes and through a couple of distinct drainages that come directly into the pond. Effluent is released through this floating intake pipe through which flow can be measured. But because the pond does receive the natural stormwater flows, the discharger can't always control releases from Graham's Pond. During periods of heavy rainfall, like we had last weekend, excess water flows over a spillway, which is a typical component of a dam-like structure. You know, we've got a berm here, and then over here there's a spillway that allows water to flow over the pond to protect the dike. And that flow can't be measured very easily. So in this photo, I'm standing on the dike, and if I turn around, I'm looking at the drainage channel that receives the releases from the pond, as well as the irrigation field that I showed in the aerial slide. Before I discuss the permit and the CDO that are the subject of today's hearing, I'd like to give you some permitting and enforcement history. Occidental's last permit was adopted by the board in 1993. Permit adoption was postponed over the years as Regional Board worked with this small, financially limited community to help identify a means for them to comply with increasingly more stringent water quality regulations. Between 1993 and 1997, this facility had 2,200 effluent limit violations, primarily related to pH and chlorine residual, which have to be monitored daily. And there was also a summertime discharge in violation of the basin plan, and that occurred because of a wet late spring, early summer season. Between 1997 and 2007, violations were addressed with administrative civil liability complaints that assessed penalties for the many violations. And then there were cease and desist orders requiring Occidental to achieve compliance with basin plan and waste discharge requirements. The CDOs required interim projects that could be implemented in the short term, as well as a longer-term capital improvement project that would be needed to bring this facility into full compliance with all of our regulations. Since 1997, violations of effluent limits have continued, but at a much lower rate than prior to 1997. I'm sorry. There were about 180 effluent limit violations that occurred between 2000 and 2012 compared to the 2,200. Violations subject to mandatory penalties were addressed with two administrative civil liability complaints. And a large portion of those assessed penalties were used by the district to upgrade their collection system, and that project was completed back in 2007. Eventually, we'll have to bring another ACL complaint to the board to address ongoing violations of effluent limits that are subject to mandatory penalties, and presumably those penalties would also be deferred for use on the long-term capital improvement project. So although it has been difficult for Occidental to achieve compliance with waste discharge requirements, the water agency, as the operator of the facility, has made various improvements to the facility over the years, and many of those are listed here on this slide. With the implementation of each successive project, staff has seen an improvement in water quality and a decrease in violations under the 1993 permit. Since 1997, several capital improvement projects have been evaluated. EIRs were developed for the first four projects listed on this slide, but each of those projects was later identified as being financially and or technically infeasible. Currently, the water agency is evaluating a zero discharge project for this facility, and that means that this project would be geared towards eliminating the discharge to surface waters, and that would include eliminating the discharge to Graham's Pond. This project that's being evaluated includes construction of a new storage pond to replace Graham's Pond, and increasing the amount of irrigation acreage. Although this project does look promising, it will still take time to develop and to design it, finance it, and construct it. So let's talk about the permit. It has a number of significant changes in relation to the 1993 permit. The new permit requires Occidental to meet the same standards that other NPDES facilities in the Russian River and throughout the region are required to meet. However, Occidental won't be able to comply with some of the new requirements right away. Overall, we have general agreement with the discharger regarding the terms of the permit, but we do recognize the challenges of implementing a permit for a facility that cannot comply with some of the significant terms of the permit. For example, with identification of Graham's Pond as a water of the U.S., Occidental will be discharging year-round to surface waters in violation of the basin plan seasonal discharge prohibition, which limits discharges to surface waters to the period of October 1 through May 14th. In addition, the new permit requires compliance with effluent limits that are being applied to Occidental for the first time. This includes basin plan requirements for tertiary treatment and compliance with the California Toxics Rule. Occidental cannot currently comply with these effluent limits, and the plant would need significant upgrades to do so, or they would need to eliminate the discharge to surface waters, which is what they are working toward. I would like to point out, though, that Occidental will be able to comply with some of the new requirements in the permit, including more stringent chlorine residual limits, recycled water requirements, and the new source control requirements. So that brings us to the cease and desist order, which is needed because Occidental can't comply with many of the new permit requirements. The discharger is continuing to make progress toward a long-term project while continuing to make improvements at the plant over time. So staff believes that it is reasonable to work with them with a compliance schedule to give them time to complete the newly identified capital improvement project. The water agency initially requested another 10 years to complete the project because they're concerned that it will take time to come up with the financing for the project. However, the compliance schedule in the cease and desist order is set at 5 years. This is because the water code only allows 5 years with a provision, you know, to give an additional period of time if the discharger demonstrates that they're making good progress. And regional board staff expect the discharger to make all reasonable efforts to make the project move forward in the shortest time frame possible. The CDO also includes interim effluent limits and protection from mandatory penalties for those constituents that they provided justification for to show us that they really can't meet them and that they have a plan to address those. We received comments from three different parties. The Sonoma County Water Agency's letter was written on behalf of the Occidental County Sanitation District. The Water Agency requested various changes to monitoring requirements. They asked for broader permit conditions in relation to recycled water and the longer compliance schedule. The California Department of Public Health, who has jurisdiction and mandate over recycled water regulations, also submitted comments, and these were minor comments and very easily addressed in the final version of the permit. And finally, US EPA requested changes to the reasonable potential analysis that resulted in adding effluent limits for cyanide and a slightly more stringent effluent limit for copper. Regional board staff felt that it was reasonable to make the changes to reclamation and monitoring requirements that were requested by the water agency. And some of those are identified on this slide. Although there are some reductions in monitoring requirements, these changes will not diminish staff's ability to assess compliance under the new permit. And then there were several changes that staff did not make that the water agency requested. We didn't make the permit into a master reclamation permit as requested because the water code gives us flexibility to include reclamation requirements without it being a master reclamation permit. Future WDRs likely will be master reclamation permits because they do plan to add additional users above the one user that they have now. The water agency also asked for postponement of chronic toxicity requirements in the permit until after the state board adopts the new proposed toxicity policy. A draft of that policy was actually heard before the state board in June of this year, but it wasn't adopted. Adoption was postponed due to the need for some changes and modifications to the language in the policy. Staff has heard that the policy may be adopted as early as this spring, but we couldn't postpone the inclusion of chronic toxicity requirements because it is an explicit requirement of the existing state implementation policy for toxics control. And we didn't feel that we could justify putting language in from a draft policy, not knowing what kind of changes are going to occur to it between now and its adoption date. So staff believes that use of the language that we've developed to comply with requirements in the SIP, the State Implementation Policy, allows us to have flexibility in the toxicity requirements that we do put in the permit. And we use that flexibility to give them the minimum possible monitoring frequency for chronic toxicity, which is annual. Larger facilities have quarterly requirements. And then the CDO compliance schedule, as I already discussed, the water code limits our ability to give them a schedule that is more than 5 years long. Water agency staff are here today to discuss concerns with the board. And then finally, the late revisions. Staff identified the need for the late revisions that are on the late revision sheet, and they apply to the monitoring and reporting program. These revisions are minor, and they do not change any requirements that the discharger needs to meet. They simply provide clarity and better integration with electronic reporting requirements that all NPDES dischargers are held to now. Water agency staff are in agreement with these changes, and they're the ones who do the electronic reporting for Occidental. And before I finish my presentation, which I'm almost done with, I'd like to note that the state board meeting was held earlier this week, and there was an information item regarding state board efforts to assist small and financially disadvantaged communities with compliance issues, and staff is committed to working with the discharger and the state board to provide whatever support we can to help Occidental with compliance and financial assistance. And with that, that's the end of the presentation, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. And then after questions, I would like to recommend that the board open the hearing for public comments and then adopt the proposed orders with two separate votes. The permit needs to be adopted with the late revisions, and the CDO does need to be adopted with a roll call vote.
Kathleen, thank you. Excuse me. It's a sizable permit for a very small facility with a long history. It's kind of the summation. It's got an interesting history to it, and it discharges to surface waters of the U.S. and of the state. Board member comments or questions? Why don't we move on right now? I have a speaker card for Sonoma County Water Agency. My understanding is they have a presentation with board material coming. I would encourage anybody in the public that wants to speak to this item to fill out a speaker card and get it to Patty. No problem.
Just a point of order. Is this a new comment, what you provided the board? Because if so, they would need to include it in the record. If it's, was this provided during the comment period? Okay. Then it's up to the board to determine whether they'd like to accept this as.
My understanding, Mr. Rice, is that this is a this is information that they are giving us today in written form as part of their presentation. So I ask that they give us this. Give all board members this. So duly noted that this is in the record. And by the way, this is looks to me like, from the standpoint of the what's been given to us, just so we're clear, it looks to me like an explanation, basically, and a language regarding effluent toxicity. So maybe if I could ask, you know, I would imagine you are going to weave this into your presentation so we can take it on. But that's yes. What has been entered into the record.
Yes.
Great.
Well, also, just to clarify, aren't these amendments to the staff? Yeah, so they're not scientific testimony, they're not background, they're amendments mm-hmm. for the board to consider.
Correct.
Well, I'm sorry. Would you explain that to me?
You clearly do not want new scientific testimony coming in or other evidence. Generally, boards allow someone to say you should change your resolution wording to blah, blah, as being a little different.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Wendy Yesland. I am an engineer with Sonoma County Water Agency, and I'm representing Occidental County Sanitation District today. So good morning, Chairman, members of the board. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the Regional Water Board staff for their willingness to discuss and modify the MPDS permit conditions. The resulting permit provisions are commensurate with the district's impact to receiving water and will allow the district to dedicate more of its limited resources towards completing the compliance project. However, there is one major issue, the toxicity requirements, that we request be addressed. The district understands that current regulatory policies dictate acute toxicity effluent limits and chronic toxicity triggers. However, the State Water Board will soon, in spring or summer, as Kathy mentioned, adopt the statewide toxicity policy that will supersede the basin plan and state implementation plan requirements. The new policy will implement new testing protocols, new species screening procedures, and a new process for assessing effluent limit compliance. Of primary interest to the district is that the policy will also provide an exemption for small disadvantaged communities, making the current permit provisions obsolete. The State Water Board notified the regional water boards that new policy requirements may be incorporated when the permits are reissued. However, waiting until the new permit expires will force the district to invest significant resources in toxicity monitoring and divert funds from the compliance project. We respectfully request the change in toxicity requirements be made much sooner to help the district stay on its track, its current track, to eliminate discharges to surface water within 5 years. In its response to the district's comments on the tentative order, the Regional Water Board stated that it does not believe the permittee will be exempt from toxicity monitoring under the toxicity policy because it suspects the effluent is having an impact on receiving water. There is no evidence that the district's effluent is causing toxicity in Dutchville Creek. All of the acute toxicity tests completed on discharges from Graham's Pond had 100% survival. There has been episodic toxicity measured in the wastewater treatment plant effluent, but no wildlife is affected by effluent discharge to Graham's Pond. In addition, neither the wastewater treatment plant effluent nor the Graham's Pond effluent has ever been tested for chronic toxicity. As such, there is no evidence to suggest that any chronic impacts are occurring in Dutchville Creek. The district requests a permit reopener clause that will identify all changes that may be considered for a permit amendment when the statewide toxicity policy is adopted. In particular, that the permit may be amended to address the small community exemption and remove acute and chronic toxicity requirements. This change will save the district $25,000 to $50,000 in monitoring costs per year and reserve staff hours for implementing the compliance project. The district has drafted proposed changes, and that's what we provided you today and for your consideration on the screen here. The regional board staff requested that we also provide an update on the compliance project. So as you are aware, the district is proposing to update the facility so that it no longer discharges to the water of the state and will no longer need to operate under an MPDS permit. The district is currently in the design development phase of that project, and we intend to submit plans to the regional board as early as February this 2013. And the current estimated project cost is $4 to $5 million and will include construction of a 12.5 million gallon storage pond and expansion of the irrigation system. The pond will be designed to hold up to a 100 year storm event. As you know, this project is crucial for the district. However, the high costs associated with it and the small rate base in OCST makes it infeasible to complete the project without obtaining extensive grant and low interest loan funding, We are moving forward with the project design and environmental work, but many of the final dates that are included in the CDO and MPDS permit are contingent on securing that necessary funding. Therefore, the district appreciates that a provision is included that allows your board to provide up to 5 more years for completion of the project with proper justification. Pam, did you want to include?
I'm Pam Jean, Assistant General Manager at the Water Agency. I manage operations there, so we get to work with this facility every day. And I really wanted to express my appreciation for your staff, specifically Kathy, but also others, including Mr. Leland here, who worked really hard with us to make this a permit that, although we can't comply with it necessarily 100% of the time, it's far more acceptable at this point than it was when we first saw it. So we really appreciate their work with us on it. And I do want to express that we are committed to getting a capital project done out there in order to eliminate that surface water discharge. But we ask, and I've already heard an offer of help from your staff, we are going to need help getting funding. This is a, as Wendy said, a $4 to $5 million project with 70 connections in the district. That comes out to somewhere between $50,000 and $70,000 per connection in order to implement this project. That's pretty significant. And to date, all of the alternatives that we've looked at, you saw Kathy included them in her presentation, really were infeasible mostly because of how much they cost. So this is a real hindrance for this district because it is so small. I also wanted to let you know that we are including, the Water Agency is including this project in our proposal for funding as part of the North Coast Integrated Regional Water Management Plan Phase 2 of Prop 84. Those grant proposals are, the grant applications or submittal of those projects is due very soon to the North Coast IRWIMP. And this is the only capital project that we're including as part of the Water Agency's sort of overview, including any sort of projects at any of the other facilities that we operate. So we're hoping that we will get some funding from that process. But again, we appreciate your staff's time and effort. It was substantial, and we really do look forward to working with you in the future, finding a solution out there for this small community.
Thank you very much. So just to be clear, what, and Wendy, you described this, so what you're asking for is an amendment to the fact sheet and the permit itself as a reopener clause to reflect the fact that the state board is working on a statewide policy for toxicity, correct?
Yes,
and
that
that's
correct.
What this is.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
So if you look, there's additional language there for to add in about the acute toxicity as well as the small community exemption that I mentioned.
Understood. Can I ask you a question as a follow-up too, Wendy? You talk, since we're on the topic of toxicity, you mentioned that there's been no history of a toxicity problem in the receiving water here. Can you expound upon that a little bit? How much data and how far does this data go? Because if I look back on the compliance record of this facility, it goes back to 95 in a permit, or 93 that's a permit that's dated. But nonetheless, how much data is out there on the toxicity side, given that this site does direct, it discharges the waters of the U.S., mm-hmm. it's got a year-round discharge going on, and it's a secondary plant. Do you have any idea about that?
I don't know that off the top of my head. We do have a consultant out in the audience who looked at that data. Do you want to have her come forward?
As information is available, it would be, and toxicity is not a great issue. I think what I'm trying to get at is just the statement. I'm concerned with this site from the standpoint, the Dutch bill. I live in West County. I've lived in West County for a long time. I'm sensitive to the fact that this is a small community with a small number of hookups and obviously a very steep price tag for a fix. At the same time, we have a facility in front of us with a permit that is quite robust that you're going to have real challenges complying with. At the same time, you're under a pretty hard order here for compliance date. and yet this site is continuing to discharge the surface waters of the U.S. I got to imagine that pond's chock-a-block full with 10 inches of rain in the last week.
I'd like to introduce Denise Connor. She's with Larry Walker and Associates, and she did a lot of analysis of the Karnak toxicity.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just going to whisper in her ear. But,
please introduce yourself.
My name is Denise Connors with Larry Walker Associates. And the point that Wendy was saying in her presentation was that acute toxicity testing has been done on the water in Graham's Pond that's released to Dutchbill Creek.
Right.
And of those, I think there's about 10 different events that have been monitored, and those all have shown 100% survival.
You're talking about 96-hour static bioassay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that information. I appreciate it. But to go further, then, I see a site here that does have a history of compliance issues. And I'm sensitive to the fact that this is a small community with a problem, though, that's been going on for a long time. So that's where my concern comes from. Mr. Corbett,
yeah,
do you have a question?
Actually, if I could have the person.
You shouldn't have left, Denise.
Yeah.
Might as well pull up a chair.
Yeah. On these smaller entities, oftentimes a weakness is adequate provisions to protect against the anti-backsliding provisions of the Federal Act, and I sort of view the toxicity issue is in that area. So my question to you is, do you think either in the staff language or the revised language, there's adequate protection for a small district to meet anti-backsliding requirements, because the larger permit holders get that advice. It's a major element in negotiations. Smaller ones, we've learned, we have to sort of help the process. So what's your opinion on that?
Anti-backsliding concerns only relate to acute toxicity because they do have a limit for it now. They don't have a chronic toxicity limit.
So you don't think it's a problem?
It's not for chronic.
Okay.
Acute toxicity, I know some of the regional boards are trying to figure out this exact question, because the new policy allows each regional board to determine if they want to include acute toxicity limits or not. So there may be a policy that's developed after the state wide policy is adopted.
Okay. And just to give a heads up to legal counsel, when the people are done with their presentation, I'm going to ask you the same question.
Be forewarned, Mr. Rice.
Yeah.
Any other board member questions? Let me ask you, too, because this compliance schedule as it's written right now gives a significant amount of front-loading to a commitment to a project. And so, not that I want to predetermine anything, but 3 months or 2 months hence, I see that there's a commitment to have conceptual design plans, and a year hence from now, 60% design plans. So you're significantly committing to a project here, and it sounds like that project includes a zero discharge facility in concept.
Mm-hmm. We are. In fact, we've worked probably for a good year and a half on this project already. And I did speak with the project manager, and they are prepared to provide the documents in February for you guys. And we do actually have probably a tentative pond location picked out. And I did have a picture of it if anybody wanted to see. So it is moving forward, and it is pretty front-loaded. That's the proposed irrigation areas, and the other documents, there's another document on there. Okay. I do have a hard copy if anybody wants to see it.
And it basically looks like it's east and north of the existing, it expands the existing field then.
Yes.
I see Grayton Road, I see the curve on Grayton, so
The proposed new irrigation would be to expand the existing and optimize it more than it is now. And then the pond is probably about 1,500 feet east of Graham's Pond right now.
Okay. Any other board member comments or questions? Okay. If I can have Kathy Goodwin come back up, please. By the way, I don't have any speaker cards on this, so if I can have staff come back.
It's important I like to make a comment. What's that? It's important I like to make a comment.
Do you want to start?
Sure.
Good morning, Mona.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Mona Doherty, a senior water resource control engineer with your staff. I just wanted to make a comment about the proposed language that that was just shown to you. Nothing that is currently in the permit precludes us from doing those acts and making those changes if it's warranted by the adoption of the policy. So in staff's opinion, the language that's currently in the permit is adequate, and staff is committed to working with the Water Agency and Occidental CSD on any changes that do need to be made to the permit based on the policy. So we feel that the permit as written is adequate for both our needs and the discharger's needs.
So, Mona, do I understand then that you feel you have a reopener provision should the State Board adopt a toxicity program?
Well, we could reopen the permit even if we didn't have a reopener provision, but we do have a general reopener provision.
Okay, and it sounds like you're very aware of this whole thing.
Yes, Kathy is following it very closely.
Okay.
Chair.
Mr. Hale.
You know, as I read this, it doesn't really seem like it changes the language. It just seems like it just adds a little bit more detail to it. So clearly there's still a little bit of a difference between what you feel is adequate and what the district, they don't feel that it's adequate. And I'm not sure how we get to common ground here, because as I read it and not seeing anything hidden in here, just kind of at face value looking at the track changes, it seems all it does is it seems to add just a little bit more detail and specificity. So do you have any particular concerns with some of the exact language that they're proposing here?
We're actually not sure yet. We haven't reviewed it or discussed it yet. This is when we saw these particular revisions.
Okay.
Kathy Goodwin. Actually, you know, some of this language was included as part of their comment letter. And again, as Mona said, staff felt that the current reopener language was adequate. And, you know, I know that the Water Agency is particularly concerned, you know, about the costs of chronic toxicity monitoring, and are hopeful that they would qualify for the small community exemption that is proposed as part of the new toxicity policy. And yet, you know, that's something that we're going to have to assess. You know, as they said, current or existing acute toxicity monitoring data of the water released from Graham's Pond does not show acute toxicity. Effluent discharge to Graham's Pond does show it, and Graham's Pond is being looked at as waters of the U.S. So we're going to have to process all of that, and, you know, and we certainly want to work with the district, you know, within the regulations. And because those regulations aren't adopted, there's a lot of unknowns as to how that will work out, you know, but as needed, you know, we have the flexibility with the current reopener language to make changes as necessary.
Mr. Corbin.
Am I on now? Okay. Just on the surface, on the first proposed language change, 1, 2, 3, fourth line down, where they are substituting if a numeric compliance procedures adopted by the state, and they have new's a little broader than numeric, although I'd recommend you don't even, new might cause legal problems. I mean, I would almost go, if the State Water Resource Control Board adopts blah blah, then it can be subject to reopening, because we have found these small districts are not going to be able to compete if they don't have robust reopeners, and we get into problems where it's very difficult to foresee what happens down the line. So you might want to consider that language, and I don't know whether we might want a brief recess or something for staff to evaluate it, and also for legal counsel to
I think that would be wise,
you know,
at this point.
I guess the other way of looking at it, too, is if, you know, we've got staff's commitment to work with the district and the district acknowledging staff's commitment and willingness to work with them to make this happen, as written in the proposed permit, or in the order, is that a deal breaker if we left it alone, knowing that staff is willing to, it acknowledges that this is a process that's potential, that is in development? Is this something that we can move forward with?
But the anti-backsliding, if it, doesn't make it through that test, there is no discretion, and then we're in mandatory minimum penalties, and that's why we like to have robust reopeners for the smaller people so they have as much chance as the bigger affluent, and it's to avoid getting caught where there isn't staff discretion. Of course, there's always interpretation, and I do think our staff go the extra mile, so I'm not trying to be critical, but I do find it is important to craft good reopeners for small districts.
Maybe I can make a comment to that.
Yeah.
Actually, on this agenda, if you'll notice, we did do a reopener at a small discharger's request. Yeah. We've been very responsive to doing reopeners.
If you go where we were 5 years ago and where we are now, it's heaven on earth. I'm just, but I got educated in the hard knock school of imposing fines on very small districts that it was hard to, it felt bad doing it, okay. That I want to be very careful.
Okay. Well, staff is very...
And you guys have done... I mean, I really want to say it's not like it used to be where every permit and there was nothing and you're sensitive to the issue. So I do appreciate your efforts. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that.
Thank you. Staff is committed to making any changes that are warranted and needed for the permittee when the policy is adopted. Granted, we haven't had a chance to look at this in detail, yeah. But some of the language here concerns me a bit in that it seems to prejudge the outcome of both the policy renewal and what the language will say. And I'm a little concerned about putting language that we haven't had a time to really consider in relation to a policy that's not adopted yet that prejudges what's going to be in that policy.
Okay, in the interest of staying out of the school of hard knocks, to make a command decision, I'm going to propose that we recess until 10:20, take a 5-minute recess and make sure that we have adequate counsel on what we're doing here, because it seems like a small item, but yet it could be significant. So let's come back let's make it 10:25,
yeah.
And everybody can stretch for a minute, relax, and then let's take this back up. All right, so what we're going to do, our legal counsel recuses himself on this item. We will come back after this item to finish up the Laguna TMDL update. Mr. St. John.
Good. Well, thank you. Staff took the time, and our staff counsel, David Rice, is going to make some comments and make a recommendation to you.
Sure. Thank you. As you know, staff met and considered the proposed changes, and I'm going to provide staff's response and the recommendation to approve the permit and the CDO and the permit without any of the proposed changes. So we recommend no changes for a couple of reasons. First, after careful review of the proposed changes, we don't see that the proposed changes create any additional discretion or somehow broaden our authority to reopen the permit. So I don't think that it really, frankly, accomplishes anything. And I think that there's some problem, at least to me, some of the language is a little problematic because it seems to reference a policy which has not been adopted. It's in draft form. And it also references just like a limited section of the policy. And so I think that creating kind of a reopener that so narrowly references a policy that has not been adopted, and especially since it doesn't really accomplish anything, don't think that that's a preferred approach. And also, all recent permits, including Forestville and Grayton, have include the same kind of reopener, actually the same exact language. And the language had been carefully drafted to address the issue of what happens when there's a tox policy that's adopted. And so consistency is always a good thing. And I think that if we make changes to the reopener, it begs the question of, was there something wrong with the other reopeners? And I don't think there's anything wrong with the existing language. So I think that consistency is always a good thing to maintain. And just in general, my legal counsel is always not to make on-the-fly changes to permits. I think that in the heat of the moment, mistakes can be made. And also, it does set a precedent. This was a situation where, although the issue had been raised of a changes to reopener, this specific language hadn't been provided to staff ahead of time. The first time it was provided was to the board.
Correct.
And so to kind of set a precedent whereby in the process staff is somewhat unintentionally bypassed, I think that might not be something like a path that the board wants to go down or something that the board would like to necessarily support, unless it's necessary. And here, I don't think that and staff doesn't believe that the changes to reopener really accomplish anything, that we can do everything that Sonoma County would like us to be able to do when the tox policy is ultimately adopted with the existing reopener.
Okay.
And then finally, regarding the anti-backsliding comments or concerns of Mr. Corbett, since staff proposes that there is no change to the reopener, those concerns are somewhat moot. But I also did go and look at the existing reopener, and I don't think it implicates any additional anti-backsliding concerns. So good. I'm satisfied that it's fine.
Okay. Any board member comments or questions about the discussion about?
Well, I was prepared to make a motion, but I did want to preface that the board reserves the right to make amendments on the podium. We've done it traditionally. We've used the format we have here where we allow technical staff, the executive director, and the attorney to review it whenever possible, but I want to make sure we've done it many times, and sometimes they've been very substantive if called for by the facts. So reserving that decision-making right to us, I'll move that we and do we need two separate motions?
We do. We have a roll call on the second, John.
Yeah. So let's and we need to start off with so one is 0101 and the other one is 0102.
Correct.
Let me get the numbers just, we got to get that. Sorry that I'm fumbling around here. Okay, I will move the adoption of renewed NPDS permit order number R1-212-0101.
Second.
I'm sorry, just one, there were some additional late revisions to that permit, so just include that in the motion.
Yeah, as amended by staff.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
And I will also move we adopt the tentative cease and desist order number R1-2012-0102.
And second.
May I make a brief amendment to that? That I would like to go on the correct, it is a roll call. Is that I would just like to make a brief amendment that staff and a request that staff come back through the implementation program or this schedule. I believe that there's a December 1st date of next year. I'd like to hear where this is going. I see this as a way for us to keep up on this, and my desire is to meet that schedule and just to know where we're going with this site and to make this happen.
So it's with the
request that staff come back to update us, John, by December 1st, 2013.
December 1st, 2013.
As close therein to board meeting as is figured out.
Okay, so I accept that. Does the seconder?
Okay. I'll second that.
So it is a roll call to Ms.
Aye.
Heinz. I'm sorry, I'm trying to jump. Mr. Hill.
Aye.
Mr. Corbett.
Aye.
Aye for myself. Okay, so we're good. Let the record reflect that those items were both adopted by our board, the second one by roll call vote.
Thank you.
We made your time even, John.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will close item number
9 and 10.
Go back into item number 11. So, Mr. Kuzmar, could you come back, please? Apologize for the off-ramp. Actually, we made it happen.